Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, yesterday, a jury at the Central Criminal Court sitting in Cork convicted Karen Harrington of Lakelands Crescent in Mahon of the killing of 2-year-old Santina Cawley in July of 2019. Barry Roach, Southern Editor with the Irish Times, has been covering the case and he joins me now. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
You sat through this case and will warn listeners now that clearly some of the details of the injuries sustained by Santina make for very difficult listening. And you begin your long piece today with an item of evidence produced by the scene of crime examiner. Will you take us through that?
Yes, as you say, some of this detail may be distressing for listeners. But scenes of crime examiner Detective Garda Stephen Dennehy, he was in the witness box in the first week of the trial. And he was confirming what he found at the scene. And the exhibits officer, Detective Garda Miles Moran, handed him an evidence bag, a brown evidence bag. And he took out from that a tiny pink top, which belonged to Santina. And he read the label saying age 12 to 18 months. So she was 22 months or 26 months at the time she was killed. But he held it up and he showed it to the jury. And there was a real momentary sort of silence there in court, I think, when everybody just saw the item of clothing sparkly, kid's tiny toddler's top, and absorbed its significance. It was so small, it was clear that Santina was basically a mite of a thing, you know, really, really small child. And that, I think, struck a chord with people. Just, you know, when you're reporting this, you're obviously taking the detail of what's being said, but you're also looking around the court trying to sort of sense how things are being received or the people's reaction to them. And there were other moments like that. Certainly, Sergeant Brian Tini was one of the first guardie on the scene. He's a trained paramedic, and he performed CPR on Santina when she was found unresponsive in Karen Harrington's apartment. But he was saying that she was so tiny, he had to use two fingers of his hand rather than the palm of his hand to actually carry out the CPR and try to resuscitate her, because if he used the entire full hand, as it were, he could have caused more damage to her because she was just so small. So that those moments really sort of brought home to the jury and to everybody else there what they were dealing with here.
Yeah,
they have a really, really small infant child.
Yeah, it's almost unbearable to hear it, and you can imagine what her family are going through. But I want to talk to you about Karen Harrington, because she was well known in the area as a childminder, you write, and she cared for her own younger siblings. Tell us what the people you spoke to who knew Karen Harrington told you.
Yeah, and sort of preparing for the, knowing the case is going to end this week, I sort of was doing some research and spoke to a few people in Mahon, the suburb in the southeast of the city where she grew up in Ravensdale Road. And people said to me that they were genuinely really shocked when she was charged with the murder, because she was known as somebody who actually had carved out a living for herself as a childminder and babysitting and so forth, and that she was well known in the area for that. And that really chimed with what her sister Michelle said in evidence as well during the trial, which was that from the age of 15, during a family crisis when their mother took ill, Karen effectively raised herself and her other two younger sisters. She raised the three younger siblings. And again, it was something that was a point that was reiterated by her friend Yvonne Walsh, to whom she went on the morning after Santina was found unresponsive. She arrived at her house at about 6 a.m. and Yvonne Walsh said, told the jury that she again would have known Karen from the time she was a child, and she was the only one apart from her own mother that she actually trusted to raise her daughter. So this image of her emerging was very much of somebody who cared for children, got on with children. And even Michael Cawley, Santina's father, made that point in his evidence. He said that he trusted Karen. Santina always got on well with her, and she got on with Santina. And we heard from Michelle Harrington that when Santina suffered a broken femur when in the care of her mother, it was Karen who actually brought her to her hospital appointments in CUH. So there was this real dichotomy between the fact that Karen was charged with the murder and the previous sort of evidence relating to her treatment of children. And Brendan Graham, defence counsel, made that point, you know, that character was important in this case, and character of Karen up until then, and there was no history of violence. Gardaí confirmed that she was somebody who looked after children and cared for children.
Well, that brings us to the relationship then that she had with Michael Cawley, Santina's father, who had other children too with his ex-wife Bridget O'Donoghue, and Santina was the youngest child. He was looking after Santina. He said, as you mentioned there, that he trusted Karen Harrington with Santina. But will you take us to the day that Santina died, the lead up, the hours leading up to that?
Yes, we heard from Michael Cawley. He dropped Karen Harrington. He had Santina with him, and he dropped Karen Harrington into Cork City. Met her later that evening. She'd gone to the with this friend of hers, Martina Higgins. They were down at the Atlantic Pond near Páirc Uí Chaoimh. They were had some drinks, they had some cans there, and she later said that she smoked a joint. They went back to Martina Higgins' apartment in Elderwood as well that evening. Michael came with them and with Santina. Things seemed to be going fine, but Michael was expecting a call from a cousin of his coming from Limerick, and he suggested to Karen that the cousin could stay with them at her apartment, and she said no, and that sparked off this row where he accused her of not willing to accommodate her, his cousin, but that she was fraternising with, quote, Pakis and blacks in a casino in Cork, and that she was a whore and a prostitute. Karen stormed out, went home, and CCTV footage, which was crucial in this whole investigation, showed her returning home on her own at 1:36 a.m. Michael Cawley and Santina stayed at the party, as it were, and left just after 3 a.m. and arrived back at Santina's apartment, or Karen's apartment, sorry, at 3:05. It seems there was a row again there between Michael Cawley and Karen at that point, and he went off back to the original apartment to get his phone. He couldn't access there, so he went walking around Cork City Centre trying to find the cousin.
When he went to Karen's apartment at 3 o'clock in the morning, the evidence showed from the CCTV footage he was only there for a matter of minutes, is that right?
About 4 minutes or so, yeah. They had this row. He went off then and he left Santina in Karen's care, and as he said, he trusted her. He then went around Cork City looking for his cousin, and what was interesting, I suppose, from an investigative point of view, the investigation team under Senior Investigation Officer Detective Inspector Denny Collin, they obtained a huge amount of CCTV footage, over 300 hours from about 70 locations, and they actually traced his movements from Bury Manor Road back into Cork City Centre, I suppose a distance maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles, around Cork City Centre before he came back out at about 5 o'clock, arrived into the apartment at 5:08, and then there he found Santina naked under a blanket, under a duvet cover, unresponsive, and he came out crying, calling them, the neighbours, called the guards, called the emergency service, my daughter's dead, and that obviously triggered the whole investigation. So
the investigators then were pretty clear that Michael Cawley was not in the apartment when Santina died.
Yes, and that was critical to their case, because obviously they were arriving to a scene and they had to check out every avenue of inquiry. But from their investigations and the, as I say, the security, huge amount of this, they virtually tracked him every 200 or 300 metres on his route in to the Cork City Centre and back. So he was excluded. And the other thing that was crucial to them in terms of excluding him as a suspect as well was Detective Garda Brian Maher, who accompanied him to the hospital, later went back to Michael Cawley's apartment with him in Grattan Street and asked him to hand over his clothing that he was wearing. He handed over that. That was examined forensically, and there was no trace of blood from Santina on that. So those two things really effectively removed him as a suspect from the case, preliminary suspect as he would have been.
So from just after 3 a.m. then to just after 5 a.m, that's the gap, if you like.
And that's the critical period, yeah.
And that time frame, the 2 hours or thereabouts, you go through in your piece today, Barry, in great detail what's known about what happened there. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, well, the first aspect of this is the CCTV. As I say, it excluded Michael Cawley, but also the CCTV, there was one particular camera that captured the entrance to Karen Harrington's apartment. It's a duplex apartment. There was one door on the third floor and another door on the fourth floor. This camera from an estate called Clanrickard, on just the city side of Elderwood, captured those entering, and it showed Karen returning at 1:36 and staying there until about 5:10. So she didn't leave the apartment, and that was critical. The other thing then, of course, was her version, to the extent that she gave one, was that she came home, fell asleep, came home on her own, fell asleep, woke up when Michael Cawley came at Santina. She put Santina down for the evening, fell asleep again, and then woke up after 5 o'clock when Michael Cawley was asking her what did she do to her daughter. But Gardaí were able to challenge that because they got witness statements from people in the apartment complex. A man called Dylan Olney, who lived next door, he had confronted Karen over a commotion, and he said he heard her screaming and shouting and taunting at a child. A woman called Aoife Niamh McGailey, who actually heard commotion as well and confronted Cairn at another point in the evening, and then there were other witnesses who didn't actually confront her but who heard her screaming, and that all didn't tally with her version that she was asleep during that critical period. So Gardaí were able to put that to her, and she conceded on interview that she was awake, but she said that the roaring they heard was her roaring at Michael Cawley, and after he left she was roaring and raving at herself over it. So that was her explanation of that.
Mm-hmm. And the Gardaí, when they came to the apartment, when they got that call, they didn't go into the apartment at that time?
No, they didn't, because it was dead quiet, or there was a dead silence, as Prosecution Counsel Sean Gillan said. The warden told, it's important to say this, that when Dylan only rang, he said there was noise. No, he thought he'd actually said there was a child crying, but he didn't on the Garda record wasn't that he mentioned that. So they weren't aware of the child aspect to it, or the child in distress. So the two guards arrived at, I think, about 5 to... they got the call at 4:31 and arrived about 20 minutes later with 10 to 5. They knocked on Karen Harrington's apartment. They looked in the window, but there was no sign of anything. So they left, but did advise them if there was anything further by way of disturbance to contact them. But they weren't aware at that stage the possibility that there was a child at risk in there.
And then the next thing that happened was that Michael came back after 5 o'clock and he discovered Santina there.
He came back, as you say, at... he actually, I think, came back about 7 minutes past. Again, CCTV is critical here. CCTV showing him going in at 5:07, and I think coming out, he was there for 49 seconds. He came back out, and he contacted Dylan Olney, who had met him, and said, "My baby's dead, my baby's dead, call an ambulance." And, of course, they did, and the ambulance arrived, and then we had the paramedics and Gardaí treating Santina and fire brigade personnel as well, giving her oxygen, but unfortunately they weren't able to resuscitate her. She was taken to Cork University Hospital, where she was pronounced dead or died in her mother's arms at about 20 past nine. From a Garda point of view, from the investigation point of view, what was critical, first of all, as I say, was CCTV. Secondly, were the witness statements that contradicted Karen Harrington's version that she was asleep during the tour period. And then, of course, the third aspect of the investigation that was crucial was the evidence of assistant state pathologist Dr. Margaret Bolster. We heard from Detective Garda Dennehy that Santina, and this may be distressing, had a total of 53 injuries. Dr. Bolster went through them in great detail during her post-mortem examination. I won't list them out because this makes for upsetting listening, but
yes,
the critical ones were that she suffered blunt force trauma to the brain and to the upper spinal cord. And what's most critical from Dr. Bolster's evidence was the fact that she said these injuries could not have been sustained accidentally, but they were forcefully inflicted. She said blunt force trauma is caused by somebody being struck by an object or being struck against an object, and she believed in this case it was the case that Santina was struck against an object. But again, she very much reiterated that point. The injuries were not accidental, but were forcefully inflicted.
And we know Karen Harrington hasn't admitted what happened or told investigators or told the court what happened in that apartment over that period of time, the 2 hours.
No, what was interesting was we had the memos of interview that she gave. Gardaí conducted 5 interviews with her over the course of 2 days, effectively, I suppose. And they were read out by Sean Gillan, all 5. But what was really, I suppose, insightful was the 5th memo of interview, which we saw the recording of, and Detective Garda Brian Marr and Detective Garda Dave Noonan conducted that. Detective Garda Noonan explained the methodology, as it were, in this. He's a level 4 investigator, and he said the first interview, you're trying to establish a relationship, a rapport with the suspect. The second one, you invite them to tell you what happened. You're not putting anything their way by way of suggestion, so it's uncontaminated. They put their version out there. Then in the 3rd and 4th interviews, you start introducing the evidence that your colleagues in the investigation team have gathered. And then in the 5th and final interview, you seek to commit the person to a version of events or their version of events. But he said critically, the important thing in that is you're not seeking to obtain an admission, you're simply seeking to establish the truth. So we saw that 5th interview in detail, very emotional interview for Karen Harrington. She's crying, she's breaking down throughout it, she's saying she's going to get sick, and at one point she does. Very, very tense, stressful situation. But in that, she begins from a position that she has no recollection of what happened. She was asleep during those tours. They gradually introduced her. Well, we have evidence from Dylan Olney saying that he heard you screaming at a child, taunting a child. She denied that, but she conceded then that she wasn't asleep all the time. She conceded that the evidence was that she was alone in the apartment with Santina. She agreed to that point. They confronted her then with forensics from pyjama leggings belonging to her that they found where Dr. Sibyl Waldron from Forensic Science Ireland had found 5 bloodstains. 4 of them were Karen Harrington's own, which she said resulted from her breaking glass and cutting her foot, but the 5th significantly contained Santina's blood. So she was challenged with that, and she said she had no explanation for that. She went so much along the way with them, but she just could not bring herself to the final logical conclusion that the evidence pointed clearly. She accepted the evidence was pointing towards her, but again, she said she had no recollection. It was as if she was purely horrified with what she was being confronted with, because they were showing her photographs during the interview, and she was horrified at what happened, but she just couldn't bring herself, it seemed to me and suspect others looking, she couldn't bring herself to make that final take that final step and admit to herself that this is what happened.
Okay, well, Barry, the jury did that. They took that final step, and they took 4 hours and 46 minutes to find Karen Harrington guilty of the murder of Santina Cawley, and she was sentenced to the mandatory life sentence. And our sympathies to Santina's family. Barry's long read is on the Irish Times website, and it's worth having a look at for the detail, painstaking detail, Barry, that you've gone to there. And I thank you very much for taking us through it. Barry Roach, Irish Times Southern correspondent. And if you've been affected by anything we've just discussed, you can find more information and help and support at rte.ie/helplines. Just before we move on, we were in touch with the Green Party TD Nasa Harrigan in the last few minutes following the news that Cabinet has now agreed that legal framework to allow the new National Maternity Hospital to proceed. She's not able to talk to us on the programme, but she did send us this brief statement. I'm hugely disappointed with the Cabinet decision to move ahead with the deal, the hospital deal, before both concerns around governance and the business case had been addressed. As I have no other way of voicing my dissent, I will not be in a position to vote against the Sinn Féin motion on the issue this week. Now, Sinn Féin confirmed to this programme that it is proceeding with that motion, which calls on the government to ensure that the National Maternity Hospital is built on land owned by the state. Cabinet is sitting at the moment, is expected to decide whether to accept or oppose the motion. That debate will take place at 5 p.m. in the Dáil today, with a vote due later in the week. So there is more to play out on that one. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.